Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We are broadcasting today from MetLife Stadium. We've been invited to cover a very special conference they're having at MetLife Stadium called CFO Studio. We had on the president of the publisher and founder, Andy Zizas of CFO Studio. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Wise, who's always on the show. He is one of our show sponsors. Lou, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And it's really fun to be here at MetLife Stadium in Secaucus, New Jersey. Or is it Rutherford?
I think it's Secaucus. And for those who are not familiar with the facility, this is where the Jets and the Giants play. So we're in a big football stadium. That's where we are.
I think we're even going to see some of them today.
Yes, we may. And we're having dinner this evening out in the 50-yard line. We have a very special guest with us today, Timothy Englund, who is founder and president of Yes CFO, which is kind of an unusual company. And we're kind of excited to talk to Tim about not just the company, but what he does with that company. So, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Tim, Yes CFO, give our listeners a description of what that is, because I think that's an exciting approach to being a CFO for a company.
Yes, we fill a market void where the small to medium-sized companies who for one reason or another can't afford, they're growing or they're family-owned and don't want an outsider as a full-time CFO and a six-figure salary and benefit package that has to go along with that, but they still have CFO-level problems. So we serve in an outsourced basis on an on-demand or fractional basis to a number of clients, and we're several professionals strong, and we go in there and help them either with their banking relationships or their internal management issues, cash flow issues, maybe assess a new software package for them, how to develop the whole spec for how they go out and talk to an Oracle, like which is one of the sponsors here, as well as others. Mm-hmm. And to serve as their source of another opinion and help them better manage what they're trying to do.
Well, it's very exciting because you bring to them the opportunity to be able to afford that CFO expertise. And also, you look through all of the facets of a prism, not just one, which they may look through.
So, Correct.
Yeah. Now, I understand you're widely recognized for your crisis management expertise. Give me a feel for crisis management as a CFO.
There was a crisis in my career back in 1990, more or less. And I was unfortunately, I had already been downsized by Philips late in the 80s because they sold off a division where I was controller. But came to work in a private company business, and 2 years later they sold it. But they sold it to the wrong people, let's put it that way, to put it nicely. It was basically financial games. And so within 6 months, here I was trying to find out a way to make the thing survive that had been around for 30 years. And these people were basically running it into the ground for the cash. So that career event was my crisis. I had no idea what I was doing. I luckily had some good people to work with, the people I was actually working for at the original company.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we brought in some professional staff that taught me a few things. And I went through my first LBO and my first prepackaged bankruptcy all within about 18 months. So I learned all about those things. And from there, well, you know, you do one, people call you to do another. And so that became a career of crisis management, if you will. And it's a pretty broad segment of the accounting and the legal professions. There are lots of specialists in those areas, not just in a bankruptcy area. And that itself is a specialty that I don't deal in often. I deal with companies trying to keep them out of that realm.
That's right. That's what the CFO is supposed to do.
Yeah. I've gone through a pre-packaged or a pre-negotiated bankruptcy twice. Both times the company survived. So that was enough. I don't need to do another one of those.
Yeah.
But
those are pretty good odds.
Yeah. Bat in 1,000. But I only got 2 at-bats in that realm, so that's okay. It's like getting up to the majors and after Labor Day and spending a few days on the big league payroll.
Yeah,
right. If I'm not mistaken, it's usually only 1 in 10 that survive a bankruptcy. Is that not true?
Yeah, but those numbers are skewed a little bit because Chapter 11, just to give you a little background on that, Chapter 11, people go into voluntarily. Mm-hmm. Chapter 7 is the liquidation side when you're talking about businesses. And Chapter 7, if a company doesn't get out of it right away or convert to an 11, they're going to liquidate. So what happens is companies that are in trouble go into bankruptcy. That's a reorganization chapter, but they never come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they didn't do the right things going in, but because not only do they have to find a way to restructure the company, but it costs an awful lot of money, legal expense, accounting fees, to go through a bankruptcy. So you'd have to have some pot of cash to do it, which is kind of contradictory in terms.
Yes, right.
You're in bankruptcy, I don't have cash. So that becomes an issue, and that sometimes invites a little bit of fraudulent activity prior to getting in there. Like, don't pay anybody for a couple of weeks or a couple of months until you accumulate enough to get you through 6 months.
And you're doing a presentation here at the CFO Studio event at MetLife called Crime Doesn't Pay. Give our listeners a sense of what that presentation is all about, if you don't let off the steal your own thunder.
This is an event for CFOs, and we're professional CFOs, but in addition to being a CPA and a CFO, professional CFO, I'm also a certified fraud examiner, which grew out of dealing with companies that did a lot of stupid things. And when people are in crisis situations, sometimes they cross those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people have crossed those lines, and that's what caused the problem in the first place, like somebody embezzling money. So the concept today is to talk to CFOs about, number one, to recognize some of the signs of what could happen, but not only that, it may never happen to them, but the odds are pretty good that somewhere in their 30 or 40 year career they're going to come across it, to understand how to deal with it when it does happen, what to do, even get some advice about what not to do, not in a very detailed level, but to give them a flavor of the kinds of things to expect, and to also talk to them about a couple of legal distinctions between, let's say, a civil fraud issue, like the SEC wants their money back, or they want you to give back that insider trading information, as opposed to the Department of Justice saying, we're going to prosecute that guy, which is criminal, which means, you know, the Enron guys, they went to jail.
Yeah, they sure did.
You know, I mean, Ken Lay died before they got there, but,
he went to jail. Out.
Yeah, well, you know, he's in, I think he's in a prison of his own somewhere.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this is... certainly a terrific event. I guess there's something like 400 CFOs here.
I think there's about that many registered. They're still coming in. It's a long day, so I imagine some people come in around lunchtime, too.
Now, is there anything else? You say you're a certified fraud investigator.
Examiner. Fraud examiner, yes.
Explain a little bit about what you do there.
Well, let's say I'm the CFO of a company, and I realize that one of my purchasing managers was getting a kickback, was accused of getting a kickback, because that's hard to prove. You know, someone has to volunteer that normally.
Right.
How do I deal with that? Well, first of all, we haven't approached the man yet. So you have to understand some of the things to go forward to do. You may need to speak to your corporate counsel or in-house counsel or your external corporate counsel to discuss what are the next steps, how to go about it. Do you hire somebody to now recreate or in a forensic way, you know, try and go through and reconstruct what took place. How was this person hurting the company? I mean, it has to be some financial loss to the company for it to be a fraud.
Right.
A legal fraud. Somebody had to lose money, usually. And there are things along the computer side of it that requires a forensic IT expert, computer expert. There are lots of assumptions that people make. Well, just turn the computer off. No, that's a bad thing. Don't turn that darn thing off, because turning it off, you lose temporary files. So you want to control it, but you want to control it in the right way. So on the forensic side, on the computer side, on the forensic accounting side, and then dealing with an investigation, there's relationships that you're all familiar with, attorney-client privilege, for instance.
Right.
The way we work on behalf of the firm, if we're working on behalf of the attorney on behalf of the firm, that evidence is then... the gathering of information could be considered restricted client-attorney privilege. So there could be attorney-client work product, a bunch of things like that are more technical than somebody who's a CPA who's done a lot of auditing would come in and just go through the books and give you a report.
Okay. Tim, are there any liabilities to the employer when they're investigating potentially an employee fraud?
Good question.
They're not aware of.
Yeah, they're usually not aware of. If they have in-house or they have a close relationship with their corporate counsel. There are lots of things they can tell them, not the least of which is it's not always easy to prove that somebody did something, even though you may know it in your heart. And you don't have the hard proof to get them in court, but you are definitely going to relieve them of their job duties.
Mm-hmm.
Wrongful termination suits can happen, so you better have your ducks in order. You could have a whistleblower statute issue because that person could still to say that you were fired for some stupid reason that unrelated to the fraud, that you were trying to tell them that they're losing money somewhere and no one listened to you. And you became a gadfly and they decided to get rid of you. That could be a protected class of employee that could sue.
Mm. What happens in a situation where your employee is under contract and is now accused of fraud?
They tend to terminate the contract automatically if you're convicted of something nefarious. You may have to pay damages that may be in there. That's why you have lawyers. They'll tell you, an employment law is a practice area for lawyers. They'll tell you that aspect of it, whether or not you really do have to compensate a person that's going out the door who already enriched themselves at your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got the goods on the person, it's not likely they're going to be able to honor that contract. It's the question of where you're just letting them go because you're not sure, but you're not going to take a chance. And then that contract would still be in force.
Okay. Let's talk manufacturing for a moment because we're Manufacturing Talk Radio. You've had some dealings in manufacturing, and one of the questions in the United States is manufacturing growing, expanding, contracting, staying level? And regardless almost of what it's doing, how is it replacing the gray hairs who are retiring out with the millennials who are coming in?
I think that's a two-part question.
Okay.
I think if you measure it based on the amount of the gross domestic product that comes from the manufacturing sector in this country, I don't think it's ever stopped growing.
Okay.
I still believe it's still higher than it's ever been. I'm sure there are dips when the economy tanks a little.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall trend, I think, is still growing. What has changed is how many jobs are in that industry and where those jobs are. As an anecdotal indicator of that, years ago I had a cost accounting background, and there's a healthy manufacturing industry in the Northeast, but a lot has changed over the past couple of decades. And I see it in the client base, the way it's shifted here, too. And we have manufacturing clients here, but they tend to be smaller. They're not the larger companies anymore. So Brooklyn. Look at Brooklyn. Brooklyn was a manufacturing center that beat the band.
Mm-hmm.
It's all warehousing. It's becoming lofts. Lots of things have changed.
Right.
So you see that all over the metropolitan area, and it's true also in other northeastern areas. So I think you may have some corporate headquarters still here. It may be a venture-backed or a PE-backed private equity-backed firm from New York that owns it, but the firm actually doing the work is in Kansas.
Okay, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
So that they don't look for their investments geographically. That's where the money center may be, but that's not where they're working out of.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And the same thing with the West Coast PE-backed people. It's not just high tech. It's all kinds of manufacturing. They're still alive and well. And I guess as labor rates keep rising in China and other third world places, a lot of that stuff will start to come back anyhow.
Okay.
And if you put a machine in place of something, it doesn't matter where you put it. Raw materials are the same no matter where you do it.
Yeah, very true. And in terms of employee base, from the CFO's perspective, do you see a challenge coming up in the manufacturing industry for employees?
Yeah, both at the technical level and at the financial level where they have manufacturing accounting experience or quote-unquote cost accounting experience. It's not as common in this area as it used to be. Right now we are actually trying to place a controller in a very good manufacturing company, but it's going to be a hard tack because anybody with the kind of background we're looking for is probably gainfully employed.
Hmm. Right. So there's that big a shortage for cost accountants.
Yeah, the jobs went away, but so people are not going into it. It's like being the last shoe shine guy on the block. You could still make money doing it. Go to a Hilton or any other hotel, and a shoe shine guy makes a ton.
Right.
But do you aspire to do that? You didn't get that 4-year college degree.
Yeah, that's very true.
But I bet you somebody's still making buggy whips somewhere.
There probably is.
Probably in China.
That's right.
Funny thing about China, I read the other day, a couple of months ago, that there's an American supplier of chopsticks.
Oh, yeah.
Because the actual wood that they make that from, I don't think it's bamboo. Is it bamboo?
Yeah, it is bamboo.
Well, whatever it is, they don't have enough of it over
there. That's correct.
Yeah, go figure. Maybe the pandas.
So now they're making plastic and so on.
Well, yeah, there's a guy, Midwest, I think he is. And you can look it up. You probably can Google that. Yeah, American Chopsticks. He's exporting to Asia. Honest to God.
Now, one of the things that I know that manufacturers are experiencing in the marketplace is what they call the millennial generation. This very anxious, capable generation that wants to get their teeth into exciting stuff in business. But they always want to learn something new, have that new challenge. So they're moving fairly frequently either within a corporation or from job to corporation to corporation. Are you seeing that as well as a challenge?
No, not really, because we're not dealing with large corporate staffs at our end. Most organizations we deal with are pretty flat. I see what you're talking about. I see it in the media, but firsthand, we don't anymore.
Okay.
Indirectly, we do, because those folks we just talked about that are not going into really, bricks and mortar or nuts and bolts type jobs like cost accounting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not even going into accounting per se. I mean, there are lots of people who would go into this years ago, go into it because of different reasons. Not every accounting grad today is a CPA coming out. They take different routes. So, there are people that change careers, and accounting's not immune to that.
Okay. Tim, we would be remiss if we didn't share with our listeners how to get a hold of Yes, CFO.
1-800-706-0636 or 866-FRAUD-CPA.
And you have a website they can go to?
YesCFO.com.
Oh, you have CFO.com?
Yes, I do.
Oh, my God.
That's remarkable.
No, not CFO. YesCFO.com.
YesCFO.com.
Yeah, CFO.com is another bunch of people. they publish magazines.
Yes. Tim, thank you for joining us on the Manufacturing Talk Radio. We certainly appreciate having you here, and we're thrilled to be at CFO Studio, where you're also appearing and you're a presenter. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, and get to yes.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
All Metals and Forge Group manufactures open die forgings in blocks, hubs, shafts, flanges, cylinders, gear blanks, and custom forge shapes, including seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, nickel alloys, copper and titanium for parts and assemblies in aerospace, oil and gas exploration, defense, machinery, transportation, shipbuilding, energy and power, pulp and paper, and many other industries. Visit steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment? Components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials. 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification, fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason ThomasNet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to ThomasNet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone back to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We are here at MetLife Stadium. We are talking to some of the CFOs who are here at a function called CFO Studio. This is a really exciting venue to have. This is where the Jets and the Giants play, and even the CFO, I believe the Jets, is speaking at this session later today. But right now we have Vincent Tuzio from SamaServe with us. He is Chief Financial Officer, and Vincent's been involved in a lot of different types of businesses. Probably the two most exciting are startups and what do you call the other one?
Turnarounds.
Turnarounds. Why don't you give us a little bit of your history, Vincent, and then let's talk about startups, because you know everybody in the world has got an idea for I got an idea for a business.
Oh no, absolutely. No, it's true.
I'd love to hear your comments on it, but please share a little bit about SamaServe and your background.
Well, a little bit about my background. I was a partner in an accounting firm for about 15 years, and then one of my clients made me a fabulous offer, so I decided to get a chance to see my kids grow up and.
Oh,
and,
great.
And be the coach dad and do all those great things that you like to do with your kids. And I worked and expanded my client's operations internationally to about $50 million. And then we took him to overseas as well. So I had a nice run with him and then decided to get out on my own and then do some consulting. And today I am involved in a brand-new startup. It's a technology company, and the company name is SamaServe, and it's located in Ramsey, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Up in your neck of the woods, Lou.
Yeah, that's where I hang my hat.
It's a great area.
Let's talk about startups for a moment, because as I said, everybody's got an idea for a business. There was a recent survey done that said 70% of the employees in the United States really wish they were doing their own thing. So they're in jobs, but they're not very happy there, obviously. Let's kind of walk through what they should be aware of if they're going to do a startup.
Well, I got to tell you, there are so many pitfalls in doing a startup, as I'm sure you're well aware. You know, but really right now, as I see it, the keys for a successful startup, you have to have the right team, obviously, and hopefully a group of guys or girls that have worked together before and there's some synergy. You have to have a great technology. You really have to have an innovative product or an idea to really get out there and make a difference. Timing, you know, you have to have the right timing in the marketplace to get out with your product, and you have to have tenacity. You just basically can't give up. You know, when you take a look at a startup company, you want to really take a look at the marketplace. Make sure that you have a viable product, and how can it make a difference in the marketplace? How can you make a difference in the marketplace?
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to understand those things very well.
Now, that is typically some... of the failure points is people come up with a great idea, but they don't really test it in the marketplace. They just leap into it, and suddenly they're hemorrhaging money.
Well, no, this is true. And you know what winds up happening as well, and I've seen it more times than not, if you don't surround yourself with the right people from the very beginning, you have a greater tendency to fail, whether it's your in-house people or whether it is your outside consultants that you hire and bring aboard, because obviously you can't start a business without the proper financing, whether it's angel financing or whether it's venture capital. And you really need the right strategic partner. And that's basically what I'm doing right now, is I put together an executive summary and the business plan and all the typical financials and projections that you need. But really what's key is making sure that you find that right partner who understands the business and can assist in your growth.
Vincent, in my experience in talking with different business owners, I run across this scenario where if you ask them if they have a business plan, they're working on the business plan, but they're really writing it from executive summary all the way through the financials instead of from the financials up through the document to end at the executive summary. Isn't the reverse course the best course?
Well, you know what? You want to start out with a solid product first and test your product to make sure that it's got viability in the marketplace. And, yeah, you are right. You want to then go directly to the financials and make sure you have a proven revenue model. You want to know that you're going to generate income, when you're going to generate income, when you're going to have positive cash flow, and how much money you're actually going to wind up needing to get the venture off of the ground. So the financials are really a big key to the success of the whole process. And then obviously the executive summary is equally as important.
Okay. Vincent, I want to kind of revisit and keep your card on file. I'd like to have you back on another show. I would like to delve into this a little more deeply. There's a lot of this need out in the marketplace, and there's a lot of great subject matter here in terms of dealing with startups, whether it's in manufacturing or just in business in general. So I want to revisit this with you in probably another 45, 60 days and get you back on the show for a little longer period of time. You've got too much knowledge to do this in 10 minutes, so.
Not a problem. I'd love to come back and chat with you and, you know, give you a little bit more of my my experience.
Oh, that'd be great. We certainly appreciate you being with us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. We'll be back in just a few moments with Manufacturing Talk Radio. But thank you to our guest, Vincent Tuzio. Vincent, if people need to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
My website for the company that I'm currently working for is nipros.com, and you'll be able to access me there. And my cell phone is 973-713-6221, and happy to assist in any way that I can.
That's brave. You get out a cell phone number. Thank you
very much,
Vincent. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Vincent.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back. All Metals and Forge Group manufactures open die forgings in blocks, hubs, shafts, flanges, cylinders, gear blanks, and custom forge shapes, including seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, nickel alloys, copper and titanium for parts and assemblies in aerospace, oil and gas exploration, defense, machinery, transportation, shipbuilding, energy and power, pulp and paper, and many other industries. Visit steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment, components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials? 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification, fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason thomasnet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to thomasnet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We are at MetLife Stadium. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Wise. We're hanging out with CFO Studios, putting on a terrific event here. We're also hanging out with where the Jets and the Giants plays on Sunday, so we are excited to be here. Lou, how are you finding this event? This is pretty neat stuff.
This is pretty neat stuff. It's very unusual. I'm trying to figure out how MFG Talk Radio can pull this off.
Yeah, that's right. We'd love to have an event of this size in the very near future. We're talking to some of the financial people who are here to give our listener base some kind of a different flavor of things that they should be aware of as they kind of walk through and expand and grow their businesses. And we have Mark Torriello with us. Mark, I'm going to let you explain to our listeners what company you're with and what you do for them.
Okay, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it.
A pleasure.
We are the Alliance Group. We're out of Red Bank, New Jersey. And basically, we are risk management and insurance placement experts. Quite a while back, I read an article by Jack Welch that said that if you are not consistently contributing to your client's ability to stay competitive, you're not doing your job. So we take a bit of a different approach with regards to our approach to risk management and insurance placement.
Talk to me a little bit about your approach to risk management and explain to our listeners really what risk management is, because it's a pretty broad brushstroke.
Well, basically, the way we see risk management is it's the other side of the equation. Most professionals within insurance or even some CFOs focus on the price. We focus on the expense. So it's all of the other corollary items that may be influencing or increasing your risk, such as hiring practices, loss prevention, injury management, or just a few of those items.
Okay, and when you're saying hiring practices and risk management, kind of flesh that out for me a little bit. That's a little unusual.
Sure. So let me take a couple of steps back. Our approach is profit retrieval and preservation, and in trying to keep consistent with our value proposition, which is to bring about insurance solutions on a continual basis that increase our clients' competitive edge and profitability. We basically, our entree point is through the workers' compensation insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So we will take a look at an insured's experience modification rating. So on just about every workers' comp policy, there's a rating that reflects your losses. It also gives you an indication as to how you stand up in relation to peers of your size and a number of other factors. So we take a look at that experience mod rating, and we identify what the minimum experience mod rating is for our clients because it's individual to each client. And a lot of times CFOs are not even aware of this item.
I read somewhere in looking over some of the things that you do that you help companies recapture profits that are trapped in their insurance. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So an easy enough way to do it would be to take a look at an insurance policy that's costing someone about $100,000. And if they had an experience mod of, let's say, a 0.90, which is a factor taken times that $100,000, because they had a 0.90 or positive loss experience, they're actually going to pay $90,000 instead of $100,000 on that policy. What we look at is not only where they are now, but where they could be with zero claims. So a lot of people think that if they have a 10% credit, they're doing pretty good, until we identify for them that with zero claims, their experience mod could be a 0.50 or a 0.60.
Is this something that the client should know about, or is this something that you advise them on?
The client generally does not know about it, and we do bring it to their attention. Most people envision workers' compensation, especially guaranteed cost policies or large deductible policies, as being static and black and white. And for that reason, a number of agents are not trained to go in and do the due diligence that we are to identify that profit lock. So again, if you're paying $100,000, you have a 0.90 mod, you're getting a $10,000 credit. At a 0.6, you're leaving an additional $30,000 on the table. So,
and when you're talking about this 0.9 and 0.6, that is really a rating from who? The state?
That's a rating put together by the workers' compensation bureaus in various states based on the information that's reported to them over a 3-year period by the carrier. So it's based on your losses and reserves that the insurance companies have placed on your policy. And that's another point that we can go in and retrieve money for them, because most people actually believe that the most important time in terms of cost savings for them is at expiration, when in all actuality, it's the 6 months past their expiration, because that's the period of time that their experience mod is being calculated for the next term. So at that point in time, we go in and take a look at reserves, which count as paid dollars and are calculated into the experience mod and drive it up. And we address those with the claims reps to see if we can get those driven down or closed for you within that 6-month time frame.
Now, is this a general rating based on the kind of business you are in, or is it a rating specific to your company?
It's a rating that's specific to your company, although it does take into account a number of items, such as how your losses are occurring in relation to others within your peer group. So actual losses versus what your assessed losses are.
Okay, okay. Now, you also talk about claims management. What's that component of this?
Claims management goes back to what I call the forgotten stepchild of workers' compensation, or risk management, which is injury management. And basically, a number of people are under the misconception that the insurance company will direct you to the appropriate doctors, and those doctors must all be well-trained in labor-related injuries, when in fact we find that there are a number that are not board-certified occupational health physicians. So what we'll set about to do is to review their current care providers and make sure that they are providing the right care to their employees so that they get them back to work, and that we can return them to work on an early return to work basis as well, which drives down their premiums.
Mark, where does product liability insurance come into play, being that we're dealing with manufacturers and their manufacturing product and guarantees and so on with their customers?
So product liability is on the flip side of workers' comp. It's in the package policy, usually can be put together with your property and liability. And basically, the product liability is designed to cover you in the event that your product should cause bodily injury or property damage to a third party out in the general marketplace. And as a result, you're sued as a result of that.
My understanding about product liability insurance is that the insurance rate can vary considerably considering what the products are used for. For example, if somebody's manufacturing Babo soap, if it's even it still exists anymore,
I've never heard of that one.
Versus somebody who's making an aircraft part, that the insurance premiums are vastly different if you can even get them.
Yes. So it all goes back to risk, and basically the risk with regard to Babo, who I've never heard of, but I
showed my age.
as they compare to Gulfstream in terms of their manufacturing process, there is a heck of a lot more risk with regard to what Gulfstream may be putting in their airplanes that could potentially fail and cause bodily injury or property damage.
In a situation with like Gulfstream, would they have to become certified to be insurance worthy?
No certification process really exists. It's a matter of taking a look at their loss history and their safety management within their operation to determine whether or not they're doing the right things to prevent losses, and if losses do occur, whether they have the right metrics set up in order to mitigate those claims.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
Mark, if someone wants to get a hold
you're
of
Tim.
You or your thing, we had a guest on by the name of Tim. Mark, if someone wants to get a hold of you or your company, what's the website address?
So our website is www.t as in Tom, A as in Apple, G as in Girl, WC.com. tagwc.com, or they can reach me by phone at 732-614-9231.
Great. Another courageous person who's giving out his phone number over the air to
not the cell phone.
To our to our six-figure number of listeners out there. So we're excited to have you on the show, Mark. Thank you for sharing this information.
Thanks very much, guys.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back with Manufacturing Talk Radio at CFO Studio out at MetLife Stadium in just a few moments.